present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a classified ad seen in the Costa Blanca News, read by Corrie Caulfield.
New bidet for sale. Not used, replaced by washing machine. €50.
Thanks to Brian Ash of Staines for that. Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome, please, first on my right, and a very welcome return to Richard Ingrams and Francis Ween. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Sandy Toksvig. Richard, welcome back. Which comeback kid has been yanked back onto the campaign trail?
I knew this was a mistake.
I throw that open.
It's very bad.
I always said never come back. No, actually,
he does know. He's only pretending.
It's President, ex-President Clintstone, isn't it?
yes, it
who
is.
Despite his heart condition, reappeared.
He's had a dicky ticker, hasn't he?
He had a dicky ticker and dicky lots of other things as well. but he to help his friend, what's his name? Kerry, that's the fellow, to lend him a hand in the last crucial days.
He's been pressing the flesh.
Pressing the flesh.
In all kinds of ways, as they say.
That's why. Glad to see filth hasn't been eliminated from this programme altogether. My one absence. That's it. Clintstone is the answer.
I have to say, the words in association with Clinton of pressing the flesh and last-minute surge are sort of unpleasant. it's giving me a kind of thoughts about dry cleaning. That's what I mean. What?
As the race for the White House enters its final week, Bill Clinton returned to the Kerry campaign trail just 7 weeks after undergoing a quadruple heart bypass.
How many ways round the heart are there?
It looks like Birmingham. I've seen mine.
Yeah. I think called an angiogram so they could find out. And you lie flat and you see your heart being traversed by this tiny camera. And it is extraordinary. It really is like Spaghetti Junction. It's amazing. You see, they've fallen silent and think I'm going to die. But nothing like Clinton's.
But they never build flyovers, do they? It's always bypasses.
Yeah.
News that 60,000 postal votes have already gone astray in Florida is disastrous for the Kerry campaign, but proof that the Royal Mail's overseas expansion campaign is going very well. 2 points to Richard Francis, who have decommissioned their new commission.
You what?
Euro.
It's Euro.
Who have decommissioned their new commission? I do know, actually. It's Euro chaos, isn't it?
It is.
Strange coincidence. Peter Mandelson goes to Brussels, and in no time at all, whole EU plunges into crisis. and even more amazingly, for once, it's not his fault, I think. It's this man, Jose Manuel Barroso. Rocco Buttiglione, he wanted as his justice commissioner. And this chap has views, apparently, on gays and women and that sort of thing. And it was the MEPs, unbelievably, who stopped it. They finally called a halt and said, we can't have these awful bigots here in the EU, apart from Kilroy Silk, obviously. But did you see this week he's resigned the UKIP whip about 5 minutes after joining the party. He threw a tantrum because they wouldn't make him leader. And he yelled and screamed and barracked all the way through some debate in the European Parliament.
Until he was orange in the face.
Tranquilizer dart.
He did it like his show, didn't he, when he was at the UK Parliament?
I once went on Kilroy many, many years ago.
What was the subject, Francis?
I can't even remember it.
Was it men who sleep with goats and the women who stand by them?
That was it. Except that actually I think chickens might have been involved. But
3 points. The EU is in crisis after incoming Commission President Jose Manuel Barroso was forced to back down when socialist MEPs objected to the outspoken Italian Rocco Buttiglione being made Justice Commissioner. Officials admitted the failure to appoint a new commission left a power vacuum at the heart of the EU, but refused to say if it was a Hoover or a Dyson. Sandy, why does the Navy have sympathy for the devil?
Ah, well, this is a marvellous thing. The frigate, which I think is an unpleasant word. something to do with a sausage. Cumberland. The frigate Cumberland. Uh, has a very, very relaxed attitude to different people's particular practices. And they've got their first satanic worshipper, which is lovely. Lots of remarks about the devil and the deep blue sea. And he's going to be allowed to be as satanic as he likes. And basically, the whole thing, apparently, as I've understood it from the skating across satanic worship that I've done in my time, it's about vengeance. It's all about trying to get in there first and being evil. And there's this young sailor whose mother is described as church going, who says he's a nice boy, and he went to his chief petty, whatever they're called, poop deck officer, and said, "I'm a satanic worshipper," and they said, "That's fine, we'll give you a cupboard to do that in." I've probably not got the detail of it.
I don't really fancy this ship Cumberland in serious conditions in the Persian Gulf. Just these blokes in tall pointy hats dancing around a dead goat, you think they want to?
I don't know, it'd make the enemy think twice, wouldn't it?
The Navy has decided to allow leading hand Chris Cranmer to practice satanic beliefs at sea. His satanic name is Magistrate of the Society of the Onyx Star Black Guard. Though his mother, this is true, calls him Pickle. Alan, listen to this. Upon the line, the law was. Upon the law, and the law won. I left my baby and it feels so bad. I guess my race is won. She's the best girl that I ever had. Upon the law, and the law won. Alan, whose convictions will be put before a jury?
This is another leap forward of Blunkett and the Home Office. It will now be possible for people who might not otherwise be convicted, because there isn't enough evidence and the police have been lying down on the job, that juries will be told that this man is a wrong one. And he will come into court in a suit with arrows on it, manacled to a large concrete ball. His record will be read out right from parking offences through to mass murder and all the other things he's done, so that the jury can come to the right decision and he can be banged up. I think it's rather good, actually.
It's a marvellous idea.
I think they shouldn't. I mean, we probably shouldn't have a trial at all.
No.
You find someone who's done something last time and just throw the key away.
I think you can tell a lot by a person's forehead, you know.
And indeed by his name. I remember after September the 11th, Michael Winner, that distinguished jurisprudentialist, writing a piece saying, "Osama bin Laden, you can just tell by the name that he's a mass murderer."
Just imagine that the judge sits there with the jury and then points to the person in the dock and goes, "So, how do you find this thieving, lying, bigamous bastard?"
"You will now retire to consider your verdict."
"Of guilty."
David Blunkett is very keen on previous convictions being made public. So, for the record, his previous convictions include forcing asylum seekers to fight badgers for food vouchers, burning the legs off ants with a magnifying glass, and unshakable belief that pensioners who block post office queues with tartan shopping trolleys should be hung, drawn and quartered. So, at the end of round one, Alan and Sandy have 4 points, but Richard and Francis are ahead with 5 points. And we start round two with a feature on preparing the garden for a bonfire, as seen in Gardens Monthly.
Build the bonfire just before you set it alight from a dry store of saved-up material so that you won't burn some poor hibernating hedgehog. If you have to burn them, make sure you do a good job.
Thanks to Alison Hampshire for that. Richard, why is a nice cup of tea memorable?
This could be where we start to fall behind, eh?
You do know. It was in the Telegraph, I'm sure.
Was it in the Telegraph?
It must have been.
Is it to do with the health property of copper? And how it preserves you from all manner of disease?
Yeah, top boffins have found that if you drink a lot of tea, it guards against memory loss. Obviously, it doesn't work in every case, but... something like that, yeah.
You can't be thinking of Mr. Ben, surely, Francis. Who are you thinking of?
I think of someone closer to home.
Oh, well.
Yeah, well, he drinks 25 pints a day, Tony Benn, and the gist of it is that
if you drink
25 pints of tea a day for 50 years, you could be as sane as Tony Benn.
Yeah.
Tea kills the enzymes which destroy neurotransmitters in the brain. Yeah. Something like that.
Is Michael Hyatt going to have a lot of it? I'm expecting. No, no. I think it's got to be green tea, though, hasn't it?
No, green or black.
PG tips and all that stuff. Anything.
Green is just better, but is it? Even ordinary tea works.
Oh, good. Oh,
yeah.
There you have it, Chairman. The answer is a cuppa.
Yes, indeed.
Should we move on now?
He's doing awfully well.
New research published this week suggests drinking regular cups of tea could improve your memory. The researchers hope findings may lead to the development of a new treatment for Alzheimer's disease. The researchers hope their findings may lead to the development of a new treatment for... Francis, why could cold callers be giving you the blues?
Blues? Aha, that's the clue, isn't it?
It yes. is.
Blues clues. It's the Conservatives, just as you thought they couldn't get any more unpopular, they've done it. Because they've decided that for the next election they're going to have all these call centres, telephone marketing people, to ring floating voters and say, hello, I'm calling on behalf of the Conservative Party, would you like to vote Conservative and would you like a new set of patio doors? And they'll ring just as you're cooking dinner. And then, even more unbelievably, the Conservative Party said that if any of these people expresses the slightest interest and says, well, I suppose I might vote Conservative, then they will be subjected to junk mail for the next month. Deluge with the stuff, just to make sure they don't vote Tory.
As hardly anybody belongs to a political party anymore, doesn't that mean pretty much everybody's going to get a phone call?
No, they've got a database which identifies Tories. That's what's really unsettling. Goebbels.com or something.
Next thing you know, you'll get a visit from Boris Johnson.
He'll be coming to say sorry about the phone call.
The Conservatives' new election campaign chief, Australian Linton Crosby, is establishing Tory call centres across Middle England to target floating voters. Because the call centre staff may not be party members, they're provided with on-screen prompts which give helpful hints, such as ask caller if they think they might vote Conservative. Before asking why not, wait for laughter to subside. Sandy, where did paleontology become a hobbit-forming experience?
Yes, well, this is... I'm not remotely surprised by this. They... they have finally found the origin of the species, and the origin is small. And I couldn't be more delighted. It's in some cave in Indonesia that my people... originally hailed. And everybody said they found this perfect little diminutive woman... And you could tell that they had certain tools, but not all of them, because she had a lot of facial hair, so there was no tweezer. and for reasons I cannot fathom, this was in Nature magazine, they didn't do any kind of drawing or reconstruction, but all the newspapers have done some kind of hideous painting. Everybody says we found a woman, and there's this boy, quite patently it's a boy. Even with my experience, I could tell. but the Flores people, Floro Homo Dubrius. And I'm delighted. At last, other people for my netball team. Oh, you have no idea at school what it's like to get a chest pass in the face. You have...
But they're 3 foot tall.
Yeah? What? Not everybody needs everything off the top shelf, Francis.
But they may be still with us.
They could be hiding somewhere.
Well, there is in Ireland, surely. They're in Ireland, the little people.
Are you talking about leprechauns now?
Well, there are those little people in Ireland, aren't they?
Yes, that's right.
There are.
They're called jockeys, I think you'll find.
Simon, could you get Richard a cup of tea?
Well, we've definitely got to move on now, I think.
A team of scientists have discovered astonishing evidence of a completely new species of human being, the 1-metre-high Homo floresiensis, nicknamed the Hobbit, which might conceivably still be alive today. The 3-foot, sparsely-haired creature was generally found in lonely, isolated areas, though he will be appearing in Panto this season with his lovely wife, Debbie McGee. Alan, which armless bit of monkey business hit the headlines this week?
It's very unusual.
It's a bionic-armed monkey.
It is.
Sandy tells me. We've had this homunculus from Java. There was a one-armed monkey, was there?
Mm-hmm.
They've been able to give it a bionic... It's turned it... Do you remember Janie Summers? She was the bionic woman. They've made a Janie Summers monkey. And he's got a fake arm, and he can apparently make it move by using his brains.
The interesting if they made an Anne Summers monkey. What it could move by remote control would be quite remarkable.
They'd probably sell those in Boots.
There used to be that joke about Boots. You remember? I can't tell the punchline because it's before the watershed. It's about a man who goes into a chemist shop and says, can I have a packet of Durex? And the chemist says, no, have you tried Boots? And the man says...
Oh, that was a great joke.
It was a great joke in its time. Yes.
Anyway, there's a very positive thing about this, because they're very hopeful that it'll help people with who've had spinal problems or whatever, that it will genuinely, they'll be able to make your own brain trigger some kind of a bionic arm. So it's fundamentally, it's going to be a very, very... a good thing, and it's made the monkey a wow at parties.
Scientists at the University of Pittsburgh have taught a monkey to feed itself using a robotic arm controlled by thought alone. Thanks to its new arm, the monkey can do everything a normal monkey does, swinging from trees, grooming its fur, and playing with itself the moment a group of children or nuns appear. As part of its process, a trailing wire was attached to the monkey's back. Something which could be seen very clearly during its debate with John Kerry. At the end of round two, Sandy and Alan have 8, Richard and Francis still in the lead with 9. And before we start the final round, here's a cutting from an information pack seen in the Coconut Court Hotel, Barbados.
10 things to do in the event of a hurricane warning. 1... settle your hotel and food bills to avoid future confusion.
Thanks to John Tavener of Dedham in Essex for that. Richard, listen to this.
Oh, what a glorious thing to be, a healthy grown-up, busy, busy bee, whiling away the passing hours, pinching all the pollen from the cauliflowers. I'd like to be a busy, busy bee, being just as busy as a bee can be, flying round the garden, the sweetest ever seen, taking back the honey to the dear old queen. The honeybee, honeybee, if you like, but don't sting me.
Richard, where the bee sucks, there suck I, in a cowslip's bell I lie. Then I wake up with a huge hangover. Discuss.
Yes, well, I could discuss it. My partner has murmured something about bees getting drunk in order to further the cause of science in some respect. But I'm very ignorant about this. I think you have to ask Francis for further and better particulars.
Well, that's it. That's all it is. The scientists have nothing better to do. Decided to find out what alcohol does to the brain. You know, even non-specialists feel they're the answer to this question, but they didn't. And so they fed bees with booze, and they found the more the bees drank, the more likely they were to fall over and get a bit sentimental and maudlin and start saying, you're my best friend and all that thing. And that's all it is. I mean, they're just some vast experiment. I don't know where this university is. I hope it's not in this country, is it?
No, Ohio.
That's okay, then. It's a swing state, and Bush has been pouring money into this to combat alcoholism in bees, and he's discovered that...
It's just extraordinary. They discovered that when they give them all this alcohol, they lie on their backs and don't fly all that well. That's just like pilots, isn't it? It's a similar
Scientists at Ohio State University hope to find out how alcohol affects behaviour in human beings by feeding booze to bees. The bees reacted differently to alcohol. Bees A, E and F tended to lie on their backs, as Sandy said. Bees B, C and D became noticeably aggressive. And B, G put on a white cat suit and sang Staying Alive in a night. Francis, who won't be going to the zoo?
You all right?
No.
Well, I think this is this strange story about the man in Somerset who was manager of a zoo and was sacked for stealing animals. What he did was take a few animals home every night, sort of snakes and monkeys and things, under his coat, smuggle them out, and then the next day come back in and flog them to his employers and say, look, I found some extra animals, here you are, to fill the gaps that have been left overnight by these ones that escaped. And he would sell them back. And eventually he was found out and sacked. And he had a company flat in the zoo, apparently, and he locked himself in, and there was this siege. He barricaded himself in with hostages. I think it was one wallaby and 14 tortoises. And this went on for 23 days, you see. Maybe that's how long it takes for tortoises to make a dash for freedom. I don't know. But anyway, he was eventually rounded up, and he then sued them for unfair dismissal and demanding compensation. And some sensible court this week has decided on the whole he's not entitled to any.
Zookeeper Steve Riley was sacked from Tropicaria in Somerset for secretly selling off exotic animals. He's lost a claim for compensation after a tribunal was told he barricaded himself in his flat for 23 days with two wallabies and 14 tortoises.
Takes you back to flats you had in university days, doesn't it?
No. This isn't the first incident of its kind. Last year, a zookeeper was charged with attempting to bribe a police officer after he tried to slip him a monkey. Sandy, why has the North Sea given us food for thought this week?
Ah, is this to do with haddock?
It is.
Yes, this is a curious thing. First of all, we were told that fish remembered nothing at all and that they felt no pain. And now apparently they remember absolutely everything, including how to get out of fishing nets. And they learn this when they're very, very young, when presumably it's easier to get out of a fishing net on the grounds that you're smaller and the net seems bigger. But now they've worked out that haddock are very, very clever, that they feel a lot of pain, and that they've written several important works of literature.
It seems the haddock remembers a net when it was small enough to slip through it. Mm. But if you were small enough to slip through it, you wouldn't know that it was a net. And you wouldn't know that it was bad for you if it hadn't caught you.
Yeah,
so why would the haddock get bothered 38 years down the line?
Because it's an elderly caught your mum up.
And says, stone me, it's a net.
No, apparently they pass it on. They do. The bigger haddock that are caught say to the little ones, quick, this is a net, never do this. There's a lot of in-house haddock conversation.
Yeah, by the water cooler.
Yeah.
Didn't you see Finding Nemo?
No, I didn't. I read that it was Hislop's favourite movie, so I didn't go on principle.
It's absolutely dreadful. It's a dreadful movie, isn't it, Nemo? You can't make heroes out of horrible little goldfish. It just doesn't work, does it? They just swim around in the tanks. It's hopeless. No, Hislop, I mean, I have a great respect for Hislop, but if that is true about him, thinking that's a very good film, then I might have to revise my opinion of his of his judgment.
A study of haddock in the North Sea has shown that some have developed an uncanny ability to avoid nets. Their ability to avoid nets has caused great interest in the world of marine biology and also in the household of Tim Henman. Alan, who was caught by the long arm of the lawn?
I think this is about that poor so-and-so who fell off his lawnmower.
Yes?
I mean, he was so drunk, he didn't realise that the lawnmower couldn't do more than 4 miles an hour. And as he was getting it up to 4.5, he hit a daisy or something and fell off. And large numbers of local police noticed this man weaving along the verge, and it occurred to them that he might be drunk. Apparently it's an offence to drive a lawnmower at 4.5 miles an hour. I wouldn't have been offended, but I... there we go. You're unsettlingly silent, Simon. It's not about...
What am I supposed to do? Let off party poppers?
No, I mean... Say it's the right answer.
Michael Mennell of Burton-on-the-Water, Gloucestershire, was disqualified from driving for a year after being caught drunk in charge of a lawnmower. Police were tipped off about his drunken rampage after several pedestrians complained of being mown down. Before we reel the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard.
Well, this is a bit of simple fun from the Scarborough Evening News, which I'm indebted to Mr. Roy Elsie for sending in. It says, a Scarborough woman whose daughter appeared as an extra in the English Civil War film To Kill a King has won a copy of the DVD in a competition run by the Evening News. Mrs. Graham said, it's the first time I've won anything. My daughter was pleased we'd be able to look at it again, especially on a DVD. She's in a lovely costume. It's a big green dress, and you can clearly see her in the court scene. As the actors walk forward, you can see her behind.
Frank
There's a letter here which has been sent out to GPs, but it's selling innovative healthcare solutions. It says, Ray, erectile dysfunction survey. We would like to invite you to participate in a community pharmacy erectile dysfunction survey. The survey is available to the first 100 pharmacies that reply on a first-come, first-served basis.
Sandy.
This has been sent in by Cynthia Wigley, and it's a story which occurred in Sydney, Australia. A happy and loyal wife had just one behaviour quirk. She slipped out of the house at night to have sex with random strangers. Her husband was appalled when he followed her on one nocturnal excursion and caught her in the act. But the woman was asleep all the time. She's been told that she was suffering from not a sexual problem, but a sleep disorder.
Alan.
This is from the advice column in the motoring section of the Kansas City Star. Dear sir, my hobby is ballistics. Because you cannot buy a ready-to-use heat-seeking missile, I managed to source the parts via the internet and after much time and effort put it together myself. I then drove it to a friend's farm to test it by homing it in on this old tin shed he has. Unfortunately, the shed was cold, but my automobile was still warm from the shed. My insurance company is refusing to replace my car because the policy contains a clause excluding damage by exploding devices, which was introduced after 9/11. Should I get a lawyer? And the answer is no, you should get a psychiatrist.
Final scores reveals that Sandy and Alan have 16 points, Richard and Francis this week's winners with 17. And before we leave you, here's an item from the Collingham with Harewood Parish Magazine.
We shall be meeting on Wednesday when the subject will be Heaven, How Do We Get There? Transport is available at 7:50 at the bus stop opposite the Harewood Arms.
Do that. Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz with Richard England's Francis Weems, Andy Topstick and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, George Poles and Lucy Clark. The panellist's makeup was by Tonya Weasel. And the producer was Simon Nichols.